And studies are done about the effects of racism. What's usually being examined is the effects of racism on blacks or on Hispanics. But John Morrison's study starts with the premise that maybe we should be looking at whites and on the effects of racism on white people. The question he's asked was, what are some of the effects that racism has on the racist group? Morrison is a former special assistant to the commissioner and director of the Department of Social Services in New York, and he's been the director of the Brownsville Community Centers and the associate executive director of the Brownsville Community Council. He now lives in Philadelphia, and he is an assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Social Work. John Morrison, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
What did you study the impact of racism on white people?
Well, I think one of the great problems is that there's very little motivation to make changes if we only look at it in terms of the effects of racism on blacks, which is the common way we usually do it. After all, blacks are only about 10 or 11% of the national population. If we look at it only as a problem that affects blacks, then there's very little motivation for the majority group, for whites, to really get involved in the problem. And that's where we feel it's most important to get people involved, that whites have to see it as their problem as well as a problem that affects blacks.
Do you think that many white people think that there's certain advantages for them if blacks remain an oppressed group, like maybe there'll be less job competition if blacks have no access to jobs?
Well, sure. I think that that's always been the way it's been perceived at some level or other among whites. There's the appearance that there are, in fact, more job opportunities for whites because blacks are oppressed, and I think that's the fact. Also, in terms of power and status, whites have advantages in terms of a situation that perpetuates racism. But in addition to that, whites also suffer. And that was that aspect that I began looking at last year and over the summer.
So what did you find there?
Well, that probably whites are as much affected as blacks are, at least in terms of as a group they are. There are many, many ways that we're affected, and probably because we're so much a part of a culture that has always been racist, if you will, we don't always see those things. We take it for granted. We assume that this is the way it has to be. And yet we, in many ways, suffer very, very dearly.
Give us some examples.
Well, just in terms of, for example, economics, that because blacks don't earn as much in the general marketplace, the whole economic structure is affected. For example, if blacks were brought up to whites in terms of income, there would be an additional $31 billion in the economy, a very substantial amount of money, and during these kind of recessionary times, a very welcome addition. And those additional jobs that would be created by that additional money floating around in the economy would be, in many ways, affecting whites as well as blacks, and probably in many ways the jobs would be more white jobs than black jobs. For example, if there were more cars sold, there would be many more jobs in the auto industry than there are right now. So that's just one small example. I think in terms of housing as well, very often we as whites feel a great need to move on if blacks move into our neighborhood. And we may sell at a point that we are not really ready to sell our houses. We may move on when it's inconvenient for us to do that. We may substitute a low mortgage for a high mortgage. We may substitute inconvenience for a convenient location. Just one example, someone that I'd run into in New York decided to move out of the neighborhood because it was becoming increasingly black. There were blacks moving into the neighborhood. Moved far out on Long Island, which required, first of all, a commute to get to his work. Because he had to pay a higher mortgage, he had to take a second and a third job. So he was not with his family nearly as much as he was before, and really, in many ways, was victimized. He felt victimized, but didn't identify it as being his racism that was partly to blame for his problem. He saw it as sort of an inevitable problem that he had to move on because blacks were moving into his neighborhood, and it would be unacceptable for him to stay in that neighborhood. Yet, in fact, the blacks that were moving in were middle-class blacks and, if anything, had higher income and higher education than he had. So and he was really a victim of his problem, his racism, and suffered very much because of it.
So are you going to try to run some kind of campaign to inform people who harbor some racism that it's going to hurt them in the long run?
Well, I hope just shows like this would increase the sensitivity of some people. We're looking at it from our school in terms of a concern with social work education. We're educating social workers, and one of the great problems we find is that many social workers come to school, prospective social workers, they've had really little or no experience or exposure to blacks. And yet many of our agencies do deal with blacks and have a fairly substantial black clientele. And they're not as effective as they should be with that clientele. And I think also many social workers, many helping professionals, flee from certain kinds of situations because they're not comfortable in dealing with a fairly integrated situation or a situation where they're, in fact, in the minority. So they may practice in situations that are predominantly white agencies, predominantly white clientele. And so we want people to be more aware in social work of what their feelings, in fact, are so that they can be more effective. And I think likewise we feel that there are so many social problems that have a racial aspect to them. They may or may not be directly discriminatory, but in many cases they have a very strong element of institutional racism.
How might you help your students look inside themselves?
Well, we look at it in a couple of ways. We start really from an intellectual standpoint in terms of what is racism, what are its many forms, what are some common definitions. How does it manifest itself in terms of both individual and both institutional and individual forms of racism? And then we ask students to begin to look at what their experience has been with blacks. And typically we find that our typical student comes from a very white suburban situation and has had really very, very little exposure to blacks. An occasional black in their high school, a few blacks perhaps on the college campus, which they didn't have too much to do with. And it's important, we feel, for whites to really be able to become connected with their own feelings, that perhaps in some ways they're not comfortable, that in some ways they're almost perpetuating racism by fleeing from encounters rather than getting involved. And then we began looking at ways that that they as whites can become more involved in addressing racism, both in terms of institutions and their own agencies and themselves. Sensitivity becomes really one of the most important essential ingredients for people to become aware.
Would you ever go so far as to tell a student that it would be just really pointless of them to work with a black population since their comprehension or their ability to relate is so small?
I think that we might have to do that, and I think typically that kind of person, if they're that closed, would probably have difficulty working with a lot of other people as well. That does occasionally happen where we have someone that may have strengths in other areas but is not very effective at dealing with difference.
You have worked and lived, I believe, in some integrated communities. What to you, from having been in different cities and different places, different neighborhoods, what to you are some of the ingredients of an integrated neighborhood that's going to really work, where one population won't be fleeing as the other population moves in, and where there will be a sense of community and of different populations living together cooperatively?
Right. I think there has to be an acceptance among at least some people in the area, and hopefully the leadership people in that community, that an integrated situation is, if not welcome, at least a workable situation. The communities that have turned over very quickly have been the communities where they've resisted very strongly. And to some extent, as open housing becomes more of a reality and as economic and market pressures come to play, it's inevitable that some blacks are going to be moving into most neighborhoods. And if you predict dire consequences in the first place for that sort of thing happening, if it does happen, then there's a great pressure to move along. I think there has to be that kind of willingness to at least wait the situation out and see what happens. I think more importantly, on a more positive note, is an ability of the community really be to be able to look at their problems. And they may or may not have racial aspects at all, but most communities have problems with street lights or traffic signs or schools or what have you. And those problems affect both blacks and whites. And it's important that there be mechanisms, strong mechanisms in place through community organizations, block associations, this sort of thing, to be able to bring blacks and whites together around common problems. And it's that common problem, working on common problems, I think that's by far the most important thing. If people aren't willing to work on problems, then the communication probably isn't there, and it's very difficult to really establish relationships between blacks and whites.
You've worked in neighborhood groups and community groups. What have you found to be successful ingredients of a good community group that has a sense of leadership but also a strong sense of participation amongst the people who live there?
Well, I think one thing is that a community group can't, the leadership of the community group can't see itself as being elite. They have to be willing to reach out and try to deal with all segments of the population. The groups that don't seem to work are the ones that few people elect themselves to be spokesmen on some very high plane for the community. The organization has to be able to touch large numbers of people. Communication is essential. There has to, I think, be a sensitivity, too, that the leadership can't be a white leadership, that it has to be an integrated leadership. Just a small example in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, an example of insensitivity. We, as an association, put out a leaflet promoting the neighborhood and the good features of the neighborhood, and didn't mention that it was an integrated neighborhood, and I don't think it would be appropriate to do so. But a number of blacks were offended, and quite rightly so, that there was only one or two blacks pictured in the brochure, when in fact the level of integration was much higher. It's that sort of sensitivity. And the willingness and desire and really need to include all segments of the community.
Do you have any feelings yet about Philadelphia neighborhoods?
Well, I think there are pluses and minuses. One of the things that intrigues me about Philadelphia is a very, very strong sense of neighborhood and a very strong neighborhood movement here in Philadelphia, very well-defined neighborhoods. That can be a plus in many situations, but it also can make for some neighborhoods being very insular and very provincial and very exclusionary. There are certainly some excellent examples of integrated neighborhoods here, and for a long time Philadelphia was the headquarters for a national group called National Neighbors, which was an alliance of integrated neighborhoods across the country, and neighborhoods like Germantown and Mount Airy and so on, or Chestnut Hill, are, I think, examples of integration that can work.
I don't think Chestnut Hill is particularly integrated.
Only in small ways, but West Philadelphia and some aspects, University City, I think, has aspects of that, although I live in University City and I don't feel that the level of communication between blacks and whites is quite at the level that it should be at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, John Morrison, I want to thank you very much for speaking with us this afternoon on Fresh Air and for telling us about some of the work and some of the thinking that you've been doing. I've been speaking with John Morrison, who's an assistant professor in the University of Pennsylvania's School of Social Work. And we've been talking a bit about the study that he did on the effects of racism on whites and the implications of that racism for white people. He's had a lot of experience in neighborhood work in integrated neighborhoods in New York City, and again now is at the University of Pennsylvania.